From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. On this special edition of the program, we feature two distinguished female members of Congress who have both chosen not to run for re-election this year. The Congressional Research Service reports that out of the 535 members of the lower and upper chambers of Congress, 131, or more than 25%, are women. A larger number of these female lawmakers, 105, are Democrats. 22 are registered Republicans. Women have been running for office and getting elected in record numbers. We are likely to see that trend continue in the 2020 cycle. Our first guest is Congresswoman Nita Lowey, a Democrat from the state of New York, currently chairwoman of the powerful Appropriations Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives. Congresswoman Nita Lowey has been representing New York's 17th congressional district for more than 30 years. She represents parts of Westchester and Rockland counties, an area in the Hudson Valley just north of New York City. Since she was elected to Congress in 1988, Congresswoman Lowey has assumed key leadership roles in the Democratic caucus. She was the first woman and the first New Yorker to chair the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. She is also the first woman to chair the House Appropriations Committee. Throughout her legislative career, Congresswoman Lowey has been a leading proponent of educational opportunity, health care, homeland security preparedness, women's issues, a leading international role for the United States, and national security. She has also chaired the Subcommittee on State Foreign Operations and Related Programs, which is under the Appropriations Committee. In her farewell speech to her committee colleagues, she said, quote, "Do not succumb to the pervasive partisanship that permeates what can feel like all aspects of our professional and sometimes our personal lives," close quote. We'll talk with Congresswoman Lowey about her role as chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee, the issues to which she is dedicated, her lifelong commitment to bipartisanship, and what she believes is at stake in the upcoming elections. Congresswoman Nita Lowey joins us via Microsoft Teams. Congresswoman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have a chance to talk with you.
Congresswoman, why did you decide to retire after more than 30 years of distinguished service as a member of Congress?
Well, let me say, in 32 years, I have had the most extraordinary experience. I've accomplished a great deal, and I think it's time. It's as simple as that. And I should say, I love the job. I love what I'm doing. I had an opportunity to interact with so many great members. I am retiring as the chair of the Appropriations Committee. And this was, of course, a great honor.
Speaking of the Appropriations Committee, Congresswoman Lowey, I'm not sure that our vast audience grasps the power of your committee. Briefly explain as plainly as possible why we always use the word powerful before the word Appropriations Committee.
Certainly, it's very clear that if you're chair of Appropriations, you're in charge of all the money, $1.4 trillion, and give or take a little bit here and there. And we make the decisions as to how we spend the money. I work with my colleagues. We have very, very committed, outstanding members on this committee. And when it comes to the funding, we make these decisions. And I do think how you spend your money is really an understanding of our values. So I work very hard, and we make, I think, decisions that make life better for people all across the country and internationally around the world.
And speaking of values, as chairwoman of the committee, what types of programs and priorities have you championed?
As you know, the Appropriations Committee has 12 subcommittees. I serve on the Foreign Ops Appropriation Committee, but of course, I have a voice in every one of the subcommittees. But I'll talk about that for a minute because I know it's important to you. I have been a strong advocate for international education for women and girls. This has been critical as I've traveled to many countries, and you see how important it is to give our girls the tools so that they can stand taller and they can be their own people. I remember another incident which was very critical. We are in charge of the research budget at the National Institutes of Health, and I made sure that we were promoting gender parity because at that time, even the lab rats were male. I often talk about that because we had to make sure that funding at the NIH provided investment in women's health, women's research, women's funding.
That's extraordinary. Well, another very important topic, particularly this year, is, of course, COVID relief. And we know that the democratically controlled House of Representatives has championed that relief. But I wonder how disappointed you may be now that there's still a bottleneck that the Senate, the White House, have not yet come to an agreement as we are seeing cases on the rise and businesses needing relief, individuals needing relief. What is your view on that?
Well, first of all, the Senate must pass the updated HEROES Act, because what it will do is support American families, address the health and economic crises that coronavirus has caused. I led the House in passing a $3 trillion relief package in May. And when the President and Senate didn't even come to the table, we passed a scaled back version in September. Even as the needs have grown, and still the Republicans won't work with us, especially on testing in a meaningful way. Our local heroes depend on this assistance. Our state and local governments can't possibly continue to keep police, firefighters, EMTs, teachers, and more on the job without raising taxes if we don't help them recover some lost revenue from the COVID crisis. So we need to pass another relief package for American families as soon as possible. And I'm very proud of Speaker Nancy Pelosi. We came to the Congress in the same time. We've worked very closely together. And just because I'm retiring, it doesn't mean I'm slowing down. We are working very hard trying to get these appropriation bills passed by the Senate, signed into law for FY 2021. And I'm still fighting for the district, and I won't stop doing that anytime soon.
Is there still time, Congresswoman Lowy, to pass the bill before the election, or do you foresee it possibly being passed after the election in the lame duck session?
Yes, I don't think there's much time now. Let me just say the election is very soon, and there's no time to pass it before. We could have done it if the president and Mitch McConnell in the Senate was serious. The Republicans continue to obstruct our progress, and we will, I am sure, get a good bill passed by the end of the year.
Congresswoman Lowy, perhaps the Republicans in the Senate were not serious about COVID relief before the election, but they certainly were very serious about confirming a new Supreme Court justice to replace deceased Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a liberal icon on the court. I wonder how disappointed you may have been that they made this a higher priority than taking up COVID relief.
I have many questions about decisions made by Mitch McConnell and the others in leadership and in the White House. So you can see where Leader McConnell's priorities are. I think we have got to work together to make sure we pass a good bill. And even if it happens after the election, we'll get something good done.
Speaking of that, working in a bipartisan way, I think that has really also been a hallmark of your career. And I quote you in your farewell speech to your colleagues that you made in July. You said, quote, "My parting request to you is this: do not succumb to the pervasive partisanship that permeates what can feel like all aspects of our professional and sometimes our personal lives." And that struck me because, again, you're an appropriator. You get down to business, and yet you're a strong and very proud Democrat. So it's an interesting and a very laudable combination. I wonder if you could reflect over the years, particularly to what extent maybe Republicans during the Trump years are either less prone to cooperate. I mean, how do Republicans during these years contrast with previous Republican administrations in terms of cooperation?
Certainly think there was better cooperation in past years. I worked very closely with President Bush, both the father and the son, by the way. I think it's important to mention, as appropriators, we have to pass our bills. If we don't pass our bills, the government shuts down. So we've always worked in a bipartisan way. That doesn't mean we agree on everything. But at the end of the year, I talk with Senator Shelby and we get the job done. And I have an excellent relationship with Congresswoman Granger as well.
Congresswoman Granger is the ranking member on the Appropriations Committee in the House of Representatives. And Senator Shelby, because the Senate is in the hands of the Republicans, he is your counterpart on the Senate Appropriations Committee, correct?
Correct. And I work very well with Kay Granger, and I work very well with Senator Shelby. But I think it's important to know that neither of them really are independent because they are closely following the directives that come from the White House. And that has made a big difference. But we have excellent relationships and we usually get the work done. And whether it's Senator Shelby speaking to the president and working with Kay Granger, we usually get a good bipartisan package coming out of the Appropriations Committee. I'm proud of our work.
Congresswoman Loy, I want to now turn to other issues which you champion: health care, women's rights, voting rights. And I'm wondering to what extent you're worried about the new Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. She's a very conservative justice. That would make her the sixth conservative justice on the Supreme Court, basically shifting the direction of the court into a solidly conservative direction, which some analysts say could jeopardize, for example, the Affordable Care Act, a woman's right to an abortion, which is guaranteed under Roe v. Wade, even voting rights. To what extent does this appointment, and as we are about to enter an election, and as we are all voting, to what extent does that upset you or concern you?
I am very concerned that this Supreme Court might reverse landmark decisions that protect fundamental rights in our society. And that's why it's so important that we elect Joe Biden, because we need him to provide direction and take us where we need to be.
Well, that certainly leads me to ask you about the election. What's at stake in your view? And what would you like to see as the outcome? What are, in your view, the major domestic and foreign policy priorities? And are you optimistic that even Democrats could not just hold the House of Representatives, but perhaps, as analysts say, be the majority in the Senate?
Well, I think it is an unprecedented moment. And this election is about who we want to be as a country. Should we continue to work for a more equitable society? Should we continue to fight climate change? Should we continue to guarantee health care as a basic human right and pass common sense gun control measures? The United States has always been respected around the world as a leader, standing up for the most vulnerable, standing up to dictators and bad actors. Do we want to continue to be the beacon of hope and freedom for the world and protect and preserve the American ideal of liberty and justice for all? No matter the outcome of this election, I have been inspired to see so many young people, not just in my district, but around the country, speaking up. Progress is achieved when you use your voice and advocate for yourself and your neighbors. And that is an inspiration to young people around the world. So I have faith that the Biden-Harris administration will make progress on all of these priorities and will help make America a more prosperous, more just, and more equitable society. I am cautiously optimistic that we can flip the Senate and even expand our majority in the House.
Congresswoman Nita Lowey is a Democrat from the state of New York. She is the chairwoman of the powerful House of Representatives Appropriations Committee. Congresswoman Lowey, thank you so much for your time and your insights, and we wish you the very best.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure having an opportunity to talk with you.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Here's a shout out to a loyal Twitter fan and listener whose Twitter handle is Mario585 from Kenya. Mario, thanks for your feedback on our recent Afghan show. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Now we are delighted to pivot to another female member of Congress, Susan Brooks, a Republican representing the 5th District in Indiana. Congresswoman Brooks was elected to Congress in 2012 and serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee and the House Select Committee on the Modernization of Congress. We'll be talking with the outgoing Congresswoman about her legislative achievements, her positions on issues such as combating the coronavirus pandemic, efforts to recruit more Republican women to run for office, and what she sees as what's at stake in the upcoming elections. Congresswoman Brooks joins us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure to be here, Carol, and hello to all your listeners.
Congresswoman Brooks, notwithstanding your imminent departure from Congress, what prompted you to run for your seat to begin with almost 10 years ago?
I'm one of those members that actually was asked to run for office. Some younger men in the Republican Party reached out to me. I was senior vice president at our state's community college system and general counsel, and they called me and asked me to consider running. And I jumped into a very crowded primary. I had never run for office before. I had served in other public offices, but had been appointed as U.S. attorney under President Bush and as a deputy mayor under Mayor Steve Goldsmith in Indianapolis. But I had never put my name on a ballot before. And I was, quite frankly, very frustrated at the dysfunction in Congress, at the lack of bipartisanship and the lack of what I thought were really important things getting done for the American people. So that's why I decided to jump in and run.
Wonderful. Well, now you're leaving us. Talk about what you think you have accomplished over these years as a member of Congress. In what areas do you believe you have made a difference?
Members, I think, typically focus on the legislation, but I don't think we can ever underestimate the important work we do on behalf of constituents who have had issues with federal government, whether those are veterans dealing with the Veterans Administration or constituents dealing with Social Security or the IRS. We work on foreign adoption issues. Those are probably the most meaningful types of work that we do. But when it comes to legislation, I partnered with Anna Eshoo of California, and we got the Pandemic All Hazard Preparedness Act. So believe it or not, I've been involved in biodefense issues and pandemic issues long before this pandemic struck. We got that bill reauthorized with increased funding back in June of 2019. I also worked on mental health with law enforcement issues, and now with law enforcement really being under siege, trying to make sure that law enforcement not only have a better understanding of mental health, but that they also receive mental health assistance. Worked on the opioid crisis, something that really gripped the country and has the addictions issues. So very involved in opioid and mental health legislation. And then I also chaired the House Ethics Committee during the Me Too movement, when a lot of members had been accused of sexual harassment in the workplace or their staffs. And that was a very difficult time for the country. But we also were able to work with other members to get some of that legislation passed as to how those matters are handled in the House. To wrap up my time in Congress, I'm very proud to be on a significant bipartisan committee, the Select Committee on the Modernization of Congress. And that is to try to find ways. We came up with 97 recommendations to improve and modernize Congress. So I'm really proud to be going out with that work just finishing up.
an impressive array of issues that you've worked on. I wonder if you could just give us one example of one of those 97 ways to improve Congress.
Believe it or not, there are so many ways, but one of the things that I really focused on was civility and the fact that we need to really impress upon new members the importance of civility, the importance of bipartisanship as a way to move legislation forward. And so we recommended that there be more focus on it during new member orientation, which will be taking place soon after this election is over. But we also talked about the importance of having bipartisan retreats of committees. Our work is so partisan, even the manner in which our committee hearings and the manner in which the House is set up is very partisan. People sit on separate sides of the aisle. You know, when they say reach across the aisle, there really are aisles that you literally have to reach across to work with other members. And so we talked and came up with several ideas, more ways to improve the civility in the House and bipartisanship. That's just one, but I think it's a critically important issue. And if honestly, if we can do a better job with that, then so many of the other recommendations will fall into place as well, like improving the budget process, improving the technology in the House, accessibility of citizenry to what we're doing. There are just many things, but I think if we can improve civility and bipartisanship, that'll go a long way towards solving a lot of other problems.
In our conversation with Congresswoman Nita Lowey, she mentioned the same thing, the importance of bipartisanship. She underscores that. It didn't used to be that way. Democrats and Republicans were able, it seems, to find more points of convergence and consensus on a number of pressing issues.
Well, I hope that the electorate begins to reward those members and return those members to Congress who do value and emphasize bipartisanship. Unfortunately, the polarization, I think, happens in large part because the media pays a lot more attention to those people on the far right and far left of both of our parties. Far less attention is paid to those folks that move more toward the middle or that get a lot of bipartisan work done.
Absolutely. And I wanted to refer to your tenure on the Homeland Security Committee several years ago. You chaired the Subcommittee on Emergency Preparedness, Response, and Communications. Given your background, how would you characterize the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic, for which President Trump has been widely criticized for what is perceived of as a mishandling of it from day one? He himself admitted that he did know about the lethality, the severity of the novel virus, but didn't want to cause panic. Do you think the White House could have done better? And maybe should have had a more vigorous coordinating role?
Well, I do think that it is important that leaders not cause panic. And so I do agree with him that he did not want to create significant alarm. And obviously, because this was a novel virus, I think the most important things he did was truly ensure that the innovative scientific companies that we have, the pharmaceutical, the diagnostic, the supply chain that we needed to address this pandemic, that there were not barriers standing in their way, that the FDA, HHS, that all of the agencies that were working on this would work lockstep to try to move as fast as they could to bring as many therapeutics and vaccines and diagnostic tests to market and to help the American people. I think what is so difficult, we've not seen a pandemic in over 100 years. And I would say that the states were certainly not prepared for it. And because of the manner in which the federal government works with state governments, the federal government did not tell all of the states how to do things in a very prescriptive way. The president chose to leave a lot of the decisions to the governors and to the states because the outbreaks were happening in such different ways all across the country. So I think it was a very difficult thing. Hindsight is always 20/20. I think we can always say that we can always do better. And that is what everyone is doing. Congress is looking at ways to improve, for instance, our strategic national stockpile. We learned about our tremendous reliance on China for our entire supply chain of PPE. We learned about our dependence on foreign suppliers, and we need now to be really onshoring or reshoring much more of that domestically. So we have just so much to learn, and that's what we have to focus on. We must continue to focus on funding public health infrastructure. I think our states have not done that sufficiently. I think the federal government has not done that sufficiently. I think now is the time that we will really focus on making sure that our public health infrastructure is funded at a much higher level.
I'd like to turn briefly to the Supreme Court. In the wake of the death of liberal justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as you know, President Trump nominated, and she has now been confirmed, Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. Now she's the sixth conservative on the 9-member court, likely shifting its ideological direction for many decades to come. What's your position on her ascension to the Supreme Court, Congresswoman Brooks?
I am a big fan and a supporter of now Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And she was a well-regarded Notre Dame law professor. So the Hoosier State does claim her, even though
That's
she
right.
was born and raised in New Orleans. But obviously her ties here in the Hoosier State that I represent are deep. Her legal background was impeccable. And I thought that her answers during the confirmation hearing were warm. They were intelligent. All confirmations, I think, are incredibly difficult. But I think she comes to the bench with tremendous background, having clerked for the court. But also, I loved how she weaved in her answers when it came to her own family. I love that as a mother, she will be the first mother to serve on the court with school-aged children. I think that's very important. And it, in many ways, it modernizes the court. And while, yes, ideologically, she may be very different from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she has tremendous respect for Justice Ginsburg. And I think that was evident from the time she was nominated. I think she will be not one to be making law, but interpreting law, and will be a strict constitutionalist. And I think that came through. And while, yes, the court may be leaning that way, she, I think, will be a very fair, open, and important justice for many years to come.
Let's talk about women and the role of women in Congress and your current efforts to recruit more Republicans to run for office. Because although there are many more women in office now than in any other year, the majority still identify as Democrats. So what are you doing specifically to recruit more Republican women?
Well, thank you, Carol, for that question. I'm very, very proud of the efforts. I think the 2018 election cycle was a really significant wake-up call for my party. We lost several wonderful incumbent Republican women, and the party and leadership of our party said that our conference in the House needed to really reflect the diversity and the opinions of the American people. And we have 228 women to run as Republicans, 94 of those women made it through their primaries and are on the general election ballot this coming Tuesday. We actually have 76 people of color, minority candidates, on the general election ballot. Again, shattering records. We also have more veterans than we've ever had on the ballot. So I hope that we'll have a much more balanced 117th Congress with a lot more Republican women.
Well, we'll certainly keep an eye out for that after the elections. Look, Americans have a stark choice between Democratic nominee former Vice President Joe Biden and Republican standard bearer U.S. President Donald Trump. Congresswoman Brooks, what do you believe are the fundamental stakes in the upcoming presidential and congressional elections?
I do believe before this pandemic, our economy was booming. Unemployment was at historic lows. And that is the absolute, I think, top priority of the Trump administration, is getting the virus under control and getting the economy back again. We have to find a way to do it safely. We have to find a way to ensure that people are working. Because if people are not working, the homelessness issue in our country will skyrocket. Issues around hunger will multiply. People losing their jobs. We've got to get not only the virus under control, but find a way back to work even while the virus is still going on. I think that is the big issue. And I am concerned that under President Biden, things will slow down. The economy will slow. Regulations and rules will be more significant, and that we will have a much slower time to recovery. And I think we are in this for some time to come yet.
Congresswoman Susan Brooks is a Republican from the Midwestern state of Indiana. Congresswoman, thank you so much for your time and terrific insights on all of these critical issues. And we wish you the very best in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Carol. Stay well, stay healthy.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.